What does it feel like to be in a safe relationship?
Well, I will tell you, at the very beginning, it was really scary. And it was scary because when you're not used to being in a safe relationship, then everything feels like a con. It is a huge barrier to try to date someone that you might be afraid of or scared of. And I hear this so often. I don't like men. I fear them. They're scary. The work that we do is not about getting a man. That's like actually the cherry on top. The work is really about becoming the woman that's ready for the best relationship of your life.
Welcome, Anwar White.
Host of Get Your Guy.
I think a lot of women believe in the spark. The butterflies are really anxiety.
I think that people, there's a safety in the fairy tale. We have to let that go. I always ask my clients when they get into relationships, did you think that this would be a person that you would be in a relationship with? 95% of the time they say no.
Can I ask you a nosy question?
I may answer, okay, girl.
Welcome! Yes!
Yes, hips and fingertips!
I'm so happy to meet you in person. Thank you for coming.
Yeah.
There's so much that we can talk about. Yeah. And I love chatting on the phone before. But afterwards, what felt like it was calling you? What do you want to focus on today?
Well, one of the things that has happened a lot and what I've been hearing about is just like women feeling unsafe. And so I really want to kind of center that. I know I have my own experience with safety and I want to share that if that's okay. And
I love that. You believe it's magic.
Also, just like some of my biggest success stories, like my proudest moments as it pertains to the work that I do, and just hopefully helping people learn how to be safer in dating and relationships.
And how do you know when you're truly safe?
We're centered. We get to breathe. We get to be instead of just doing.
That's it. We're actually going back outside. So go to the bathroom, take a moment for yourself, and then I'll meet you back outside. Deal?
Awesome.
All right. The star of this episode is Anwar White, AKA the dating fairy godbrother. Check out his podcast, Get Your Guy Podcast, which, fun fact, I'm the guest this week. Or learn about his dating and coach services at getyourguycoaching.com. What's up?
Hey, girl.
What's up? We in this.
What's the tea?
Okay, truly, I've known about you. I've known your work. I saw you on Off the Record. And then we had Jesse Wu on the podcast. And in researching for Jesse Wu, I watched one of Jesse Wu's podcasts where she had a guest who paid $10,000 to you and found her dream mate. And this had become like a big TikTok thing.
It was. Yes? It was very huge. So the words that she used were invested. She invested
$10,000.
What she didn't put in there is that she did it over a few years. I've been working with her for years through single, dumb, till engagement, and now marriage. And so, you know, I think a lot of people had a lot of issues with that because their brains went to a man and they were centering her looking for a man. And the work that we do is not about getting a man. That's like actually the cherry on top. The work is really about becoming the woman that's ready for the best relationship of your life. And unfortunately, most women, but it's specifically brown and black women, aren't taught how to date. I think part of why people also had an issue with it was the amount.
I want you to hopefully know that this was not like a Diane Sawyer moment where I was like, so you're charging women $10,000? Because I think, yeah, yes. Why would you not invest that money, right, to get the results that you're looking for? And I believe that North American culture has conditioned us to believe that relationships or relational happy is one of the ships, and that will figure itself out when the tide rises. I believe that when we have healthy intimacy, that is the tide that rises all the other ships. And so a lot of us have the idea that it's the least deserving of investment. Just before I got married, I was with somebody who I loaned $2,000, I never got back. I lived with that person and I paid rent that was solo just on me. And if I add up that tally, it's well over $10,000. So,
and divorce costs money too.
Right. So if I could have invested that money in somebody who empowered me with the strategy, empowered me with the truth, gave me lessons I didn't have to learn the hard way, and was there every step of the way to provide the kind of advice and counsel that we can't turn to our friends, because to your point, they didn't really get that education either. So yeah. It feels like a no-brainer to me.
Yeah, I mean, the work is about boundaries. It's about vulnerability. It's about learning how to flirt and banter, which is a different level of vulnerability, right? It's about healing some of those inner child wounds and understanding your masculine and feminine energy, since we both have them. And a lot of us don't give ourselves the time or space to actually really think about those things, talk about those things, understand those things for ourselves. And so, yeah, you know, my clients are really happy because they're transforming from one person to their highest self. And so that excites me more than anything else.
I love that you gave that specific language, because it's not, you're not changing people. Instead, it's like you're calling people up to who they've always meant to be.
Yeah, I mean, I feel like when we are raised and when we live life, you know, I always tell my clients, like, when you were five, you were probably crazy doing random cartwheels and jumping on rocks. And then life tells you, don't do that, don't do this. And you start to cover your heart and start to kind of regulate yourself in different ways. And so this work is about knocking down all of those walls and really coming back to your true essence of who you are. So I love what I do.
Am I talking to your true essence today?
Girl, yes, you are. Yes, you are. I will tell you, most interviews that I do are really about dating strategy, but you called me here to talk about me and my lived experience, so I'm here.
I love that, and thank you for receiving that call, and it's just a beautiful thing to know. I think that in my world too, right, there's sort of this like, well, you know, is your relationship really that great? And it's like, fuck yeah.
I know, that's right.
Let's not talk about my finances. That's the area I don't put the work in, right? Like, I had this conversation with somebody who was just like, why aren't you investing, or why aren't you doing this? I was like, look, I totally get that I could be having a much simpler, better, more multiplied life if I put effort here. I just don't want to. And I would love it if some people actually admitted that about intimacy.
Yeah.
That you actually just don't want to. I think some men in particular, straight men, do fall into that bracket where it's like...
Well, gay men too.
Really?
Gay men more than straight men, probably.
Yeah? Say more.
Well, gay men are really hyper-focused on mostly the physical. Like, and even if they're coupled, I would say 50 to 70% of those relationships are open. And because there's this physical component, and intimacy obviously is defined in a multitude of different ways, right? But there's so much focus on the physical that a lot of like the emotional intimacy and some other intimacies actually are put on the back burner. So I think straight men obviously have the same thoughts, the same focus, but they don't have as willing of a partner to actually exercise it. I actually think that me being a gay man is such a huge superpower in this work, because I'm able to understand both the female and male perspective. I think I'm very much in touch with the feminine and masculine energetic parts of myself. I am a man. I've dated men. And actually, in my relationship, I'm the masculine
dated
energy.
Dated straight men?
Dated is a very interesting term, but we can say that. You know, I always tell people when they say this, it was like, would you say that to like a male gynecologist? Would you say that to a female coach in the NBA? I don't think so, right? Because it's about, if you know your stuff and you're an expert and you're good at what you do, if you're the best at what you do, it doesn't matter.
Yes, I love that. And it is also acknowledging that there probably are more dissimilarities than differences.
Yeah.
So I do want to talk about safety with you, because that word is such a overused word. And sometimes these overused words tend to lose meaning. What does that mean to you to have safety within a relationship?
For me, safety is all about being able to be your full authentic self without fear of judgment, criticism, and also having a very clear and centered nervous system within that relationship. Now, there are people that have parents that, you know, they feel seen, but maybe their nervous system is not where it needs to be because they're scared about how someone is going to react to them. But for me, it's about feeling safe internally and externally, so that whatever I do, whatever I say, I'm still going to be accepted. Safety is acceptance. Mm-hmm. And acceptance is love.
I'm nodding so heavy because there was a word or a phrase that was gifted to me a few years ago that, you know, like the tacit knowledge, when you know something on the inside, but you don't have a word for it,
yeah.
Like when you experience it, like when you bite into a burger and you're like, what is this? And you're like, someone's like, umami? You're like, oh, yeah. Like that kind of like je ne sais quoi, like tangy, like flavorful flavor to it. But when I met Jared and I remember the exact moment we were driving one day and I just had the thought of like, oh, I don't have to audition here. And mm-hmm. I have been unconditionally loved many times in my life, by my parents, by family members, by even the concept of God, because I grew up in the Catholic Church. There's an unconditional love there, but there's certainly not an unconditional like. Mm. Certainly not, right? And you have to be constantly proving yourself that you are good enough. And if you do something bad, well, then it's like, I don't like you right now, but I will still love you. Mm. And I was like, oh, like in this relationship, there's an unconditional positive regard, which is the language I saw in a textbook. And I was like, yes. That notion that like, I think you're a good person. I don't think you always do the best things or make the right actions, but I think at the heart of you is a good person. And I treat you and talk to you as such.
And I remember my mom explaining this thing to me of like being for each other, which when he was in hospice and he hadn't chewed tobacco in like 10,000 years, but he was in hospice and he was like, get me a Nicorette patch, damn it. And he said it like that. My mom was like, okay, honey, like we'll be right back. And so we got in the car and I was like, ew, like, I'm not used to, like, grouchy Steve. Like, this sucks. And she was like, you know, like, I only care about loving him through this. And when you love someone, oh my God, it's going to make me cry. She was like, you have to be for each other. And it was the first time that she ever, like, used that word for me or, like, said that word for me. And he was only, like, a couple days away from dying. But I wasn't, like, ready to, like, deal with that. And so... But anyway, I just, ever since then, I was like, wow, like being for each other. Like they never talk shit about each other. Like they never put each other down. Like they really, I'm sure they did like behind closed doors. Like if they were mad at each other, I know that they had like fights. They weren't like perfect, but in front of someone with like their kids or like a peer, they were each other's like first priority. And I just think that's like such a beautiful sentiment. Like, and I just think that's really a marker of a really healthy relationship, like people that don't sell their partner out, even in like a funny way.
There might be people that love you that don't like you. There might be people that like you that don't love you, right? And so having both of those things, I think, are really, really helpful in terms of finding your own safety within.
Can you tell me about your journey with safeness, your experience with safety and a feeling of safety?
Yeah, I think it informs the work that I do, right? Because ultimately, you know, I grew up mostly in a single parent household with my mother. And that is because my father abandoned us when I was in third grade. But I actually use the word abandoned, but actually in reality, my mother and I ran away from him.
Mm.
And it was because he was verbally, emotionally, and physically abusive. And when I say that my work is informed by that, it is because I know that there are so many women that don't feel safe around men. And I had to do my own work to figure out how I could find safety within myself. Because I will tell you, because of my experiences with my father, you know, he would punch me in the face and say, don't cry, right? Or he would, you know, be arguing with my mother or physically abusive towards her, and I would be in my room sobbing, powerless, out of control, because I couldn't do anything as a 7-8-year-old kid. What I would try to do is to try to make peace. I would make sure when I came home, I would clean the entire house so there was no argument, right? So that the space, the environment could be safe. And so, you know, it wasn't something that I actually understood until later on in life when it started popping up in a variety of different ways. And so what I found myself doing, and maybe other people feel the same way, is I would try to find control in so many other parts of my life to make myself feel safe. But it was a fake safety, right? if I'm studying really hard and getting great grades, if I was the best athlete, right? It was all because I wanted to feel fully in control of my life. And actually, I was only doing it in the exterior, and it wasn't necessarily penetrating the interior. I think that happens so often, even though we might play ourselves into thinking that we feel safe when we're in control of the outer.
Yes.
There were still these things inside of me that I hadn't necessarily explored. And so that was the work that I had to do. And the reason why I'm a dating coach now is because I want to bring that safety to women all over the world. It is a huge barrier to try to date someone that you might be afraid of or scared of. And I hear this so often. I'm scared of men. I don't like men. I fear them. They're scary. And I didn't know that I was scared of them until I had to I went to therapy, right? I had to get really real with myself and understand that, oh, the reason why I'm just writing them off so quickly, or the reason why I think that they're all pervs or losers and I'm better than them, is because I'm scared of them. Mm-hmm. And I have to get right with my own safety and my own boundaries to feel safe within myself, so that regardless of what anyone else is doing, I still feel good. So that was the work that I had to do, and it's part of the work that I help my clients do as well.
I was chatting this with you about this on the phone when we talked about, for me, and I wonder if for you too, sometimes like even the feelings of unsafety and some of the guards we had up when we were in an unsafe environment continue to follow you through when you're actually in a safe environment.
Yeah.
Because that's what your nervous system has been conditioned for. So I'm curious for you, because you are in a great relationship now. Yes.
Sometimes. Yeah. No, yes.
I mean, you moved to another country for the love of your life.
We've been married for 14 years.
Yes.
We live in Montreal, Canada. Mm-hmm.
Yes. Raising a happy family, doing your absolute best, giving back to the world and to nurturing. At what point did you get to know and feel like it's okay? Like, yeah,
that's
you're
a great
safe.
Question. It took an entire year. Within, actually not even us dating, but us living together. Because of my own abandonment wounds, I always thought he was gonna leave. So every day when we were living together in San Francisco, the Bay Area, I'd be like, are you okay? Are you happy? What can I do, right? And every day for an entire year, because in my mind, in my body, in my spirit, I thought he was going to leave, right? It took an entire year. And I think it's important to understand that those sorts of things are going to take a while, even when you're in a relationship. We get people into relationships every other day in my program. I always tell them the first month, you're going to do something that's going to try to sabotage this relationship, and so is your partner, right? That there actually has to be a little bit of grace in that first month, because it's par for the course. You're shifting your identity from someone that has been unsafe, and sometimes we feel like we are unsafe as a single person, I wanna acknowledge that sometimes, to someone that is in a relationship, and that shift of identity takes a while.
Yes.
It's not like that, right? So, yeah, so I always say that the first month is kind of do or die in a lot of different ways, and everything is going to be intensified tenfold. But yeah, it took me an entire year. And the other thing too that I think is important is I needed him to be home at a certain time. I know people are like, oh my God, that's crazy. It's my abandonment wounds. If you're not here by 6 p.m., I'm having issues. And even literally yesterday, it was 5:37, and my man texted me and said, I'm in traffic. Here's where I am. I'll be there at this time. To your point about accepting all of these different parts of yourself, he's accepted that about me. Mm-hmm. It's not a problem, because he knows that's just part of the package, right? And that's love, and that's safety, right? When we think about being fully accepted for all of the things, right? Not just the fun parts.
That's beautiful. How did you choose a partner who had the emotional capacity to go through a year and still say we're forging ahead? Because sometimes people can misinterpret that as like, well, do you want to leave, or is this going to be forever? or oh, this is a lot. But he was like, I'm gonna hold you through this, and I know where you've came from, I know where you're going, and we're gonna get there together. I think that's a really beautiful thing.
Well, he's a fifth and sixth grade teacher, so he has a lot of patience.
Yes.
That's number one. Number two, we had these conversations about what we've gone through and how that looks and how that shows up in our lives. So it was all on the table, right? He knew that it wasn't gonna be, those sorts of situations weren't about him. He had the context. And I think it's important for all of us to understand when you're in that sort of relationship, that it's important to explain some of the context of some of these behaviors that maybe are coming from a trauma-filled place. That comes from a trauma-filled place. I feel like the longer that we're in the relationship, the less I feel that way, but he still does it.
Oh my gosh. Right? And you don't have to ask anymore.
No, but and I don't even need it, to be honest with you. I don't need it anymore. Girl, all
like,
that
I'll
stuff,
take it though.
All that stuff ended around year seven, year eight, right? But it still happens.
Yeah, it's part of your ritual.
It's yeah, totally.
I think a lot of us think that the goal of getting into a relationship and the safety of a relationship means, oh, I no longer feel insecure. Oh, great, I no longer feel fear of abandonment. Mm-hmm. Ooh, finally, like all of that like ick and that question and that longing, loneliness, that's all gone. And when you're in a relationship that's healthy, but you still feel those, you might question if like, okay, is this not my person? But instead, it's the fact that you can still feel those and you have somebody else to work with you through them and embraces you and loves you anyways and gives you that unconditional positive regard. I think that's the actual win.
Yeah.
I don't know if you ever stop being insecure.
I mean, we're human.
Yeah.
Right? Though everything is gonna come up. I always say like, to think that a lot of these things are gonna just stop coming up, I think is unrealistic. I think it's how we manage them. I think the potency of them maybe starts to dissipate or decrease over time, but they're still gonna come up, and it's really about how you manage them.
Yeah, and then maybe you no longer have the like come home by 6 p.m., but now you got something else, right? Like, maybe before for me, like I had a lot of insecurity around like physical touch and like requiring a lot and needing that as validation. And now, not so much, but like what I require more of is just compliments.
Yeah.
My body is changing, I'm getting into an older age, like I'm seeing a difference in how the world responds to me, so I require more of that within my relationship. So it's like new insecurity unlocked.
Level stay?
Yes, we passed the other level, but it's like Mario. We passed right. That level, but now here we are at this other one, and so yeah, I do think that there's something really beautiful about having a ritual for how you manage these human parts that happen when two humans, even two humans who are great for each other, connect.
Yeah, yeah, definitely.
What's the difference between the you that, you know, I asked you about that five-year-old version of yourself who's like, just actually back to who you're really supposed to be. But can you paint me a physical picture of who you were before you discovered what you needed to feel safe and also had the tools to choose a safe partnership and who you get to be now? Pardon the interruption, but I had to tell you about the incredible sponsor of this episode, me. I mean, why not, right? It is my podcast. And on that note, did you know that Lovers is so much more than a podcast? It's a deluxe suite of services designed to help you reach your intimate potential. Now, there's tons of free tools. For example, Shai. Yup, I trained in AI on the past 20 years of my work. So if you have a quick question and want to know how I've answered this in the past, go to the homepage. Then there's the newsletter, weekly letters from my lovers you can sign up for. And last but not least, there's my resource library of free quizzes and worksheets. Now, if you like these but want more, come a little closer. Introducing the premium paid experience inside the Lovers community. Connect with like minds, book one-on-one time with me, join one of my weekly classes, and of course, be a part of the podcast. The Lovers community is $20 a month for members and free for muses because yes, I created a free preview space so you can learn more before committing. Now, I know I threw a lot at you just now, so let's keep it simple. All you have to know is go to loversbyshan.com to get everything you need and nothing more. Again, that's loversbyshan.com. Can you paint me a physical picture of who you were before you discovered what you needed to feel safe and also had the tools to choose a safe partnership and who you get to be now?
Yeah. Who I was before I was running. I was running away from, it's interesting, I was running away from mediocrity. I was running away because I thought that excellence was going to make me feel safe. And maybe it was my blackness, my gayness that I was proving, trying to prove, but, or for other people out there, their womanness, whatever it may be. But I thought that excellence was going to make me feel safe. So I studied the hardest. I was the best. I did this, I did that, so that no one could say anything about what I was doing, right? Got the job, went to the good school, all of that. And it didn't make me feel safer. I just kept staying on this wheel. And actually, when you do all of this work and you're running, and you're still kind of similarly at the same place, because the accomplishments, they don't stay for a very long time, I've learned. And so I realized I needed to figure out, well, what the hell am I running from? What's going on here? Why can't I just be? Because being is actually very safe. And for, I think, you know, when you grow up, oftentimes like us, oftentimes we might not have a lot of opportunity to just be. And many of us have strict parents who, or you got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do this, you got to do that. So it's hard to kind of really just be. And so I had to really take time out for myself. Part of the catalyst for my own transformation was actually taking short-term disability, and like, because I was working too hard and my life was just insane with all of the work that I was putting onto myself and all of the self-induced pressure. And so that's what my life looked like beforehand. Actually, I met my partner at that time.
On disability?
Well, during that time.
When you were starting to feel that this wasn't right.
Correct. And I was like, no, you're not it. You're not it. When I was like about to make that transition. And I say that because I think it's an important statement to make, that like sometimes we're not ready. We're not ready. And this was my person, and I wasn't ready for him at that moment. And so like I was like, you're not doing anything. I gotta keep it moving, right? And it was through like my short-term disability and just taking time for myself, meditation. I got very much into like, you know, The Secret and manifestation and really focusing on the things that I wanna do. I also stopped doing a lot for my family and my friends. I was doing everything. I was the person with the great advice. I was the counselor. I was the one that was picking up the bill every time we went
high
to dinner.
Earner, yeah.
I was the one that was picking people up from the airport and dropping them off. I was doing everything instead of just being. I was doing everything. I think when you do that, you lose yourself. And when you lose yourself, you can't have safety. So that's where I was. After having that short-term disability and also going to therapy at that time, I changed my career. I changed my location. I started afresh. I started anew and kind of built my life, but also myself from the ground up. I created a new identity because the old one wasn't working for me.
Mm-hmm. So. Even though it was highly accomplished, highly decorated, valued, everybody wanted and needed you to be that version, you knew it was a betrayal to your genuine cartwheeling 5-year-old self.
Yes. I really was cartwheeling. I really was. Yeah. So I say that to say that I think that sometimes those sound really extreme, but I think that they're necessary. Those shifts, those changes. It was necessary for me at least. So it was in that I was able to open myself up more. I actually got a pair of dogs. It sounds really crazy, but having dogs or having something that has like this unconditional love for you does change things. Now, am I saying everybody needs to get a dog? No. But what I am saying is that there are relationships that can help shift you towards your highest good and your highest purpose in relationships. And so my two dogs were the catalyst for that, and before the kids came. And then the kids just opened my heart up completely.
And the dogs, did they give you a kind of love you'd never experienced before?
I wouldn't say that, but I would say that they allowed me to be without performing and without having, I could just sit there. I didn't have to do anything. And it sounds maybe trivial to some people, but it was a big thing.
So let me get this straight. We move cities, we move lives, we met our love of our life in our past life. How did they find their way back to you, or vice versa?
We had connected through Facebook, and he messaged me one day, and we just started talking again, and we haven't stopped talking since.
That's so beautiful. I actually love your story too, because people often give, I think relationship advice, obviously, and love advice, dating advice is incredible. And I actually hate it depends, because it doesn't give directiveness. And I love that about your work too, that it's like, have a strategy, have a clear cut opinion. And look, you may have to adjust here and there, but at least you're gonna start off with the framework. Mm-hmm. But sometimes certain frameworks become like gospel, like you'll know when you know, right? Like when you meet the right person, you'll just know. I definitely did not know. Mm-mm. When I saw Jared in the club, I was like, oh my God, he would be the perfect revenge fuck. Mm. Like, that was it. And I'm like, this is just gonna be a play thing to make my ex mad because he's hot, whatever, and that was it. And then when we started dating, it wasn't actually until Jared told me that he loved me that I even allowed myself to acknowledge that there was something more substantial between us than like what I had originally thought. And so, that if you know, when you know, sometimes you just don't. And it could be because of past trauma and not being able to accept, not being ready for that. Or it just may be because that's just life. Sometimes 70% of relationships are actually built off of a platonic connection first.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And we tend to dismiss that fact and think that we're gonna be swept, yeah.
I think you make a really good point, and I'm glad that both of us are sharing kind of our trajectory or journey to our relationships, because I think that there's a safety in the fairy tale, and I think that we have to let that go, right? And that can feel really unsafe for a lot of people, but I will tell you, I always ask my clients when they get into relationships, did you think that this would be a person that you would be in a relationship with? 95% of the time they say no, because it doesn't look the way that you thought it probably will look, but it feels the way that you always wanted it to feel. And that's what we have to focus on.
I think in life, people focus so much on a to have list or a to be list, especially when it comes to romantic partners. Mm. They have to have this car, this income, they have to look like this. And instead it's the to feel list. How do I want to feel when I'm with the right person?
That's it. That has to be the center. Not just how I want to feel, but what can that partner do or say to help me feel that way? Not make me feel that way, because you are a partner in the way that you feel. You have agency in the way that you feel. But what can that partner help to contribute to those feelings too? We have to know that, so that when we're evaluating in dating, we have what I call an answer key, a clear answer key to be able to evaluate if this person is going to be a great connection for me or not. Most people don't have that answer key. They don't have that list that should be feelings focused. And because of that, I think we're oftentimes connecting with partners that are not great for us, which makes us feel even more unsafe in dating.
Mm-hmm. What does it feel like to be in a safe relationship?
Well, I will tell you, at the very beginning, it was really scary. And it was scary because when you're not used to being in a safe relationship, then everything feels like a con. I hear this all the time, and I felt that way as well. When's the other shoe gonna drop? And the gag was that shoes drop all the time in relationships. It's about people's skills to pick them up together, right? And so many of us are so used to the roller coaster that like...
But it's a shoe that's dropping, not an anvil or a piano.
No,
which happens to a lot of people.
Of course, of course. And also, like, having, you know, having an understanding of your own regulation to make sure that you're not making it into an anvil, right? That there are some things that happen, and being able to come at it from a healed place will make sure that it doesn't balloon into something that it was never meant to balloon into. So, yeah, I think it's really scary to be in a safe relationship in the very beginning, but with time, you will also find your safety and your calm and your centeredness, right? Where you can just exhale and be okay.
Mm-hmm. I felt that exhale with you. What came to mind for me is 99 problems, but this ain't one, right? Yeah. Like that sense that you almost have with your dogs, right? Like you don't ever expect to come home one day and them to turn their nose up at you, or to think that you're less or uncool, or see you do something and be like, ugh, you can't walk me today, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I wish you would. But there is this like beautiful sense of like, yeah, this unconditional positive regard, this safety, and this I'll be here with you through this. And we can go through hard things and we can come out the other side together. And it might, to your point, take a long time to get to a place where you really believe that. And so much of your work is empowering women to know that that is the truth for them.
It has to be. And you know, I really focus and center Black and Brown women in the work that I do. And I think I wouldn't be doing my job, and I wouldn't be honest if I wasn't saying that it can be a not so safe world out there for those women.
Yes.
Right? And so, of course, they might feel defensive or hesitant to trust and to understand what's the angle, what's going on here, right? That's why I think we have a lot of code switching, a lot of split personalities into ourselves. You know, I always say, like, you know, we're one way with our parents, we're one way with our friends, we're one way with at work, we're one way with men, and we're doing this. And I think when you do this, it can be hard to understand and to show up fully. And I think if you're not able to show up fully, it's going to be hard to be loved fully. And if you can't be loved fully, then love can feel unsafe. So part of the work is kind of combining all of those split parts of ourselves into one. And I know that sounds really scary for some of us, especially when it comes to work, but I think it's necessary.
Mm-hmm. Did you live in a family where you had to compartmentalize your sexuality, or was there an acceptance?
Oh, there's a full acceptance, but I also grew up in Southern California, and, you know, I went to in private schools, and it was a different kind of vibe, but, you know.
I love that for you.
Me too. Very lucky. My mom was making me uncomfortable because she wanted to talk about my sexuality so much. I'd be like, I don't want to do that with you. Yeah. So, but yeah, I credit my mom with the confidence that I have, because I know that there are a lot of LGBT individuals who don't show up in the world in the way that I do. And so, you know, when you have someone who is telling you, you can do anything.
Can I ask you a nosy question?
I may answer,
okay,
girl.
I love that.
I may. Girl,
I shouldn't
I have
even preface it that way, because it makes it going to be
girl.
Weird. But your mom, did she ever love again?
Yes. I actually helped her find her husband.
I am so excited.
Yeah.
Can I get that story?
They've been together for 12 years now.
Oh, my God. I'm so happy for her.
Yeah.
That's the ultimate client, you know, to see your mom go through what she did and to know the magic of her and to help her find that magic and demand that other people see it too when they try to love her and to be successful. Oh, my gosh. I can't even imagine.
Yeah. It's one of the biggest accomplishments of my life. Yeah.
Do you want to share a little tea on it, or is that enough?
Well, I mean, they met. I mean, I don't know what tea you want to know. What? Like, how did I help her? How did she kind of, well, you know, she had really focused on her children for so long. Like, she took herself kind of out of the game. She's like, F this. Like, I'm just going to do me, do my kids. Work. She was an entrepreneur. She had her own fashion boutique. And, you know, her and I had always, we're best friends. We talk every night while we're watching the NBA playoffs. Like, we're just best friends. And so, one day she was like, I think I'm ready to date again.
I said, okay, girl, let's do it. Let's do it.
So I got her online. It was a little bit crazy because she's a beautiful woman. And so it was overwhelming to have all of these different messages back and forth. Oh my God, look at this message. Oh my God, look at that message. And then, you know, she started going on all these dates with a variety of different people. She went on a date with some motorcycle guy. She's kind of a prissy princess. So the fact that she opened herself up to different kinds of experiences and different kinds of people, I think was really important. And I think really helped her find herself in this love game, right? And so after doing that for a while, she met her amazing husband, Brian, who showed up in the way that he needed to show up. And one of the things that I love about him is that he is the only man that I've seen with her that works harder than she does. And that's hard to do.
Works hard extrinsic, like how you used to work back in the day?
Both. Doesn't matter. He's doing it. He's a doer. He gets it happen. He makes it happen. Right?
Does the emotional work, does the outwardly work, you know, achieves excellence and then also is okay with just being.
Yeah. He and I love that because I think that she needed that to be able to rest more fully into her own feminine. Which, as a single mother, it's hard to be in your feminine because you got to take care of everything.
Yes.
So she needed that to be able to just like breathe and exhale again and just like, I don't have to do all of that. He does it. He wants to do it. He derives pleasure for doing it for me. It's beautiful.
I'm so happy to hear that. And I can't think of a better testimony than that you got to share your gifts with your mom. And that's an accomplishment that's worth celebrating. And you talked about how some accomplishments can feel fleeting. I mean, that's for a lifetime. And the work that you're doing is for a lifetime for many people. So for anybody who wants to learn more and is intrigued by this, where do they go? And what do you want them to keep in mind when they get there?
I mean, you can listen to my podcast. My girl's going to be on there soon.
Yes, yes.
The Get Your Guy Coaching podcast, or go to getyourguycoaching.com. I'm on socials at Dating Coach Anwar. Listen with an open mind, right? I'm sharing a lot of different perspectives for the modern dating era to make sure that you're navigating it with a level of safety. And with safety comes confidence and comfortability. And with that, you'll be able to rock it, right? Ultimately. So I just want them to listen with an open mind and an open heart.
I think if you're intrigued, however you feel about the idea of making this investment in yourself, just learn a little bit more. I think it's a very beautiful vocation and an amazing calling. And I'm glad that you are in it because you seem very safe.
Thank you.
I
appreciate that.
What a great ring. Is that your wedding ring?
Double, girl.
I love that.
You gotta know it, girl.
Yeah. Why double?
Engagement and wedding. Catch it.
Yeah.
Get you a double ring, honey. Get you a double ring.
What a huge thank you to Anwar White for being sensational. You can follow your dating fairy godbrother on Instagram at datingcoachanwar and check out his podcast that I guested on this week. Now, we covered so much in this conversation, from relational and emotional safety to dating while being trauma-informed to why co-regulation with a partner can be one of the most healing things that we experience. There was so much to talk about here that I could not wait to unpack it with my Lovers community. And did you know that you can be a part of this community too? Head to loversbyshan.com/community to sign up. I want to hear your guys' thoughts on this episode. And I first want to start by reflecting on something that Yancy said after she watched it. And Yancy said that it brought her to tears. And she talked about the part that he discussed being abused, physically abused by his father, getting in the language he used of being punched in the face. And it made me really reflect on the fact that I didn't in this episode say, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And I always make an active effort when I speak to women who are survivors of abuse, whether that be sexual or physical, to stop them even mid-sentence to say like, that shouldn't have happened to you, I'm so sorry. And I didn't do that with Anwar. So that was like a regret of mine of sort of kind of breezing past that moment. But there was so much to share, and kind of like insider tea on this. When I talked to him on the phone and I was like, I'm kind of looking for like your personal story, and we've had people come on in the past as experts and not really kind of give that heart, and it just doesn't really feel like it matches the tone of the podcast. So later he divulged to me how little he actually shares about his life and how much this was a leap of vulnerability for him. So I just want to hold space to thank him for doing that, and to make it clear that I think that I missed a step in honoring that vulnerability there. But enough about me, now on to you. What did you think?
I've been talking a lot with my therapist and like my own relationship with my father, and like just this idea of how men show up for me and like feeling safe and like picking partners and like looking at sort of patterns that I'm trying to break, and like sort of this selection process that I've had is picking people solely based on this person is safe. Like, I want to find out if this person is safe, instead of just surrounding myself with people that have like an innate comfort. I'm just trying to find out, is this person going to be bad to me? Is this person going to lie to me? That's what my father did. And it's like unbreaking those patterns. Like, I'm trying to now show up for myself and look at safety as like, I am safe. I don't have to like prove safety.
Jumping back to Mariah being like, you gotta get right with my own safety and with my own boundaries. Mm-hmm. And that's where safety comes from, is that we have to have those boundaries in place, because we can't control what other people do. We can only control ourselves. Also, what can my partner do or say to help me feel that way? To have an answer key that you can then communicate with your partner, so that the partner is just not guessing. You're saying, okay, I, you know, if this, then that, you know, yeah. Here's the answer. And if they're not willing to do that, then maybe it's not the right partner for you.
I love that, Steph, in reflection of just when we think about fire safety, when we think about earthquake safety, when we think about even like safety within the home, we all have really clear markers to look for, and we all know how we're not supposed to feel. And so I do think that it is really useful as a tool to really write out and manually make that list of like, okay, what happens when I should start being alert? What is my protocol? What is my fire drill for when I get into these scenarios? I think that that's actually really speaks to the work that I do. And I started this because I found, especially as a young woman experiencing sex, is not only are you not taught about it, but you're often asked to make really hard decisions in the moment. While you're in fight or flight, while you're around someone that you like, while you're not sure of your surroundings, and now for the first time you're being presented with information or ideas and expected to make the right choice.
That definitely rang true for me. My dad was good for, if I did something really well, he would find a way to knock me down, to almost humble me. So with my ex, I could never take constructive criticism, even if he was coming from a place of saying, wow, that meal was great. I'd be like, yeah, but it didn't have enough salt, right? And he'd be like, no, it was just great. So then it would become like a boxing match. And it's like, I couldn't accept that he was accepting of me because I hadn't been accepted by my father.
Do you feel like if you had coaching, for example, a coaching service like Anwar's, or maybe more tools and resources, that could have been something you worked out within the relationship?
I definitely think if I had that coaching, because therapy came into play, it made me realize what it was, but I think it just came into play too late. So I definitely think that would have helped in that time, and probably would have helped save us, because that was part of the reason why he felt like he couldn't do the relationship anymore, because it became a thing of, I'm trying to show up for you and you're not receiving it. So he felt unseen.
I also think it's really encouraging to hear how he and his partner have worked together to for him to be secure, like where he had a partner not only that was supportive, but you know, he still texts him telling him, oh, I'm on my way, even though he doesn't need it anymore. And because I know some people will be like, well, you're enabling him. Nah, 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 nah. And I think Anwar also said something to that effect, where like, no, girl, I don't need it. That was my reflection when I was listening back. I was like, well, what's the line between you helping me heal versus your innate, not enabling, but like your, this behavior is out of insecurity.
That's such a great point, Yancy. And I think that the key to knowing if this is something that somebody can work through, or something that's going to work against the relationship, is willingness, like that want, like the want to change. I love the example he gave of the 6:30 curfew.
And they've been together now for like 10 years. And he's like, truthfully, I stopped needing it after year 7. But that meant 7 years, right? When we think about working with people through insecurities, we're not talking about one or two conversations. If somebody is 28 years old and has been doing something for 28 years of their life, it's reasonable to think it might take them a quarter of that time to adjust that behavior and shift it, especially when we're in fight or flight. So I also love that concrete example of both of them acknowledging the other person's needs, seeing a need to change, it taking a while to kind of learn how to do that, and then having to repeat that for a really, really long time. If we were to give people watching right now kind of just one question to walk away with this, what would you say that question is, and then we'll all answer.
For the first time in my life, I feel very uncertain, but because I feel very vulnerable about who I am, because I feel like I'm like, hi, like I feel very seen. I think to be known is to be seen. So I would ask people, like, how do you show yourself to people? Like, how do you show yourself to be seen? Because you can't, I don't think it's fair to ask yourself to be loved fully if you're not willing to show yourself fully.
In order for people to prioritize your safety, they have to genuinely see you. I'm really gonna sit with that one, that's beautiful. If you guys don't mind, let's talk a little bit more. I wanna go deeper on that. But for everybody else who is watching the podcast right now, we are gonna say goodbye here, and we'll see you next week on this episode of Lovers. If you don't know, you can join conversations like these by going to loversbyshan.com/community.
For me, it's, I don't know, saying all those thoughts that I have in my head that I thought didn't fit the like monogamous mold, vocalizing it, even though it is so terribly scary to vocalize it, on the other side can be great. Whether if it worked out with him, which it has, or not, because then hopefully I would find someone that does see me and does align with me.
Sharing what brings me joy and starting the process of not caring about what people think. Even if people might be like, that's corny. If I like it, I'm gonna speak my mind.
Corny is fun. They're
embrace
haters.
Corny, haters, embrace haters. The corny.
I think a majority of my life, I was put into a corner of having to kind of follow the crowd within my family. It's just now that I'm understanding who I am for myself and not for anybody else. So even doing something like this, this was really me like showing up for myself, because I can hear my own voice without hearing anybody else on top of it.
Nice group hug. That's so sweet.
A naked group hug.
Our first lovers retreat. We'll make it happen.